Welcome to Ally Fitness Podcast, a weekly production all about bringing health into fitness. Richard Lear graduated with honours from Brown University, where he received his bachelor's in economics. So after completing additional engineering and venturing coursework, he went on to found and chief product officer of four Silicon Valley-based companies in media, SaaS, human capital, and consumer electronics. He's responsible for the launch of 11 products, but today it's a company in particular that I'd like to talk to him about, GreenWave, that we'd all like to know more about. So firstly, Rich, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks, Ally. Real pleasure to be here.
Excellent. So what I'd like to talk to you about first, you've written two papers, one of which, The Root Cause of Dramatic Rise of Chronic Disease. I think maybe we should start there. Tell us about the papers you've written.
You know, I looked at chronic disease in America and, you know, I've been looking at this problem for about 10, 12 years. And, you know, we've really seen a dramatic change in the kinds of diseases that are around us. They seem to be germless. They seem to be autoimmune in nature, many neurological diseases. People are suffering from sleep disturbances. 130 million Americans suffer from sleep issues, sleep apnea being a big one. Autism and Alzheimer's have skyrocketed almost out of nowhere. Both diabetes have grown dramatically. While we usually think about disease, we think about the big ones, the cancer, we think about heart disease, cardiovascular disease, as the real threats. It turns out that 40 fast-growing diseases in the U.S. are much more of a threat right now than in terms of growth than most cancers and heart disease. What I mean by that is both of these are big diseases with lots of problems. But if you look at the growth of cancers, there's only three cancers that are growing at all, really, in the U.S. Three of those were covered in my paper. Melanoma is still growing pretty dramatically. Squamous cancer is, and so is leukemia. But outside of those, there's really no growth in the cancer, according to U.S. statistics. When you look at heart disease, same thing, cardiovascular disease. It was growing dramatically in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. And then it's pretty much shut down. There's no real dramatic growth. But these other diseases, 40 of them, and some of them are conditions, they're not just diseases, new names, irritable bowel syndrome, chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, multiple sclerosis. These diseases came out of nowhere. Most of us haven't heard of them. Even erectile dysfunction, who heard of that? 20 million people are affected in the U.S. It's huge. So I looked at the diseases that were growing the quickest with a researcher. We went to government websites. We looked at all these diseases. We found the earliest possible studies on each of these diseases and conditions between 1990 and 2015. We took a 25-year segment. That's really a generation, a human generation. And we looked at those and said, you know, if we found something in the 90s and then we found something near 2015, we looked at the growth and we extrapolated where we couldn't get exact dates because none of these diseases are really being tracked precisely. I mean, I think diabetes may be the only one. The numbers on Alzheimer's are very difficult to discern. Fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue are practically nil in the U.S., but there's good studies overseas. But almost all the data came from the CDC, that's the Centers for Disease Control in the U.S., and NIH websites, NCBI, a major NIH offshoot, which looks at studies that are credible by PhD-type scientists. And what we found is that chronic disease in the U.S. is now affecting more than 170 million Americans out of 322 million. And the 40 fast-growing diseases and conditions that we found, and this is a very conservative number, I'll tell you why, we found 704 instances of the 40 fastest-growing diseases we looked at. And remember, there's only three cancers. And in the United States over this 25-year period. So that's about 2.1 illnesses per person. Obesity is in there. Obesity is a disease. So what I wanted to find out when I looked at these diseases, what's in common? First of all, we looked at what's normal. You know, everybody looks at chronic inflammation as an issue. Chronic inflammation is definitely a tie-in with all 40 of these diseases. People know about free radicals. The technical term oxidative stress is something that you see in many diseases, and especially these germless diseases. We found that every single one had oxidative stress. And then we looked at nitrative stress, so nitrogen, where nitrogen actually creates some issues with the biochemistry. And that's a really nasty stress. It's worse than oxidative stress. It's worse than free radicals. And every single one had nitrative stress. So we looked on and on. We found mitochondrial dysfunction. So probably sounds like a lot of technical terms, but the mitochondria is so important. This is the one that we're all going to zero in on. This is where the power center of the cells is located. This is where our energy source comes from. So every cell has a mitochondria where there's created this complex process. It's often called the electron transport chain, which basically it's the Krebs cycle if you study high school biochemistry or even high school biology. And the Krebs cycle basically is turning oxygen and sugars into energy. And it's being disrupted big time in all these diseases, every single one of them. So I went through and found six common biofactors. So there's a real biomarker for these diseases. They share in common Alzheimer's and sleep disturbances, the same six biofactors. Look at erectile dysfunction and melanoma, same six.
So, sorry to interrupt there. So what are the six? You've got inflammation, the free radicals, the nitrogen stress, and then the mitochondrial dysfunction. What are the other two?
So there's autonomic dysfunction, which is your autonomic nervous system. Autonomic nervous system is the things that you don't control them cognitively or consciously, like your breathing, your respiration, your temperature of your body, your sex drive. Although someone may make a case that you do control that. But all these things happen without your actual conscious attention, and it's affected heavily. So endothelial dysfunction too. This is tissue that might line your gut. So irritable bowel syndrome, you can wonder where that came, or leaky gut. Both of those we noticed were growing extremely fast. And this is where the tissue in your stomach, lining your stomach, breaks down. There's a couple more that we could probably throw in there, but I don't want to confuse the listener. What was really brilliant, though, was around all these, we found a single molecule that was responsible for all six biofactors and all 40 diseases. And we call it the root cause of chronic disease. Now, this is called peroxynitrite. I'm going to call it P factor for now to simplify things. So first of all, talk about the chemical itself or the molecule itself. Peroxynitrite is formed in the body. It's formed by nitric oxide, which is NO. When it combines with superoxide, which is O2, sort of oxygen with a negative quality to it, so it's a free radical. So when these two free radicals get together, when they meet in the body, they form O-N-O-O. That's the chemical. Oh, no. And that's peroxynitrite. Now, I didn't discover peroxynitrite. Peroxynitrite is a well-known molecule that's very damaging. It was well explored by a team at NIH, National Institutes of Health, back in 2007. Beautiful paper about nitric oxide and peroxynitrite and health and disease. Great paper. Look it up. It's on the internet. 1,500 studies, 180 pages. Brilliant authors on it. Pal Patcher was the lead author from the NIH. I spoke with him and I said, look, peroxynitrite is a nasty molecule and it is really responsible for all of this disease going on. Do you agree? And he said, absolutely. I said, now, if I said that peroxynitrite was the root cause of chronic disease in a paper, would that be hyperbole? And he said, absolutely not. So here's a scientist that's saying peroxynitrite is the root cause of all these chronic diseases. My question is, why don't we know? Here we are, you know, 2017, that was 10 years later. This paper was published at the end of 2007, or maybe the beginning. It's been out there for a decade, and there are now 14,000 studies on peroxynitrite. How do we get peroxynitrite? How does it get formed? This is the way it happens internally. Peroxynitrite is in the body. It gets formed by these chemicals coming together. The biochemical reaction then goes on and disrupts about 126 that I've noticed. In my paper, I've listed 97. Say 97 biochemical reactions in your body that are important to life. And it's terrible because some of the reactions are vicious. For instance, peroxynitrite destroys the precursors to both serotonin and dopamine. Think about that. If you know much about serotonin, that's what's usually linked with depression and anxiety and bipolar and all sorts of psychological illnesses or mental illnesses. But it's a chemical that's at fault. When you're low on levels of serotonin, you're going to feel blue. You're going to have a hard time. The glass is half full. Peroxynitrite destroys precursors to both serotonin and dopamine. Dopamine, of course, is like the feel-good thing that you get. It spurs your motivation. It creates a feeling of a quality of life and joy to be. It's a wonderful neurotransmitter. If you're without serotonin and dopamine, how do you feel? Feel awful. You can't experience life to its fullest. You are irritable. You're anxious. You know, you're snappy. You probably start to get a little short with your conversations. It's a hard time. Your executive function doesn't work as well, which really controls the way you think about the world, the way you can think across complex topics, complex situations. These are just two of the 99 or 97 biochemical reactions that we found that are devastating, and they lead to disease, and they lead to neurological disease, or they show themselves in neurological disease, even sleep. When you think about this, you've got 40 fast-growing diseases, 704 million instances of these diseases, 170 million people affected in the United States, just the U.S., and a population of 322 million. What's the economic cost? Well, when we look back, we looked at economic costs and said, let's try to find out, you know, what's the lost productivity, lost work for all these things. Let's find out how much research money is spent on these diseases. Let's find out what people are spending on medical intervention, prescription drugs, and just the medical costs themselves. When you add them all up, this is a very low number. It's around $2.5 trillion, and this is annually. So the U.S. has a big healthcare problem. But bigger than the healthcare problem, they have a health problem. I think the U.S. is the sickest country in the world. And I think it's not really recognized that way. I think people in the U.S. think they live in a pretty healthy country. They probably think that because the, you know, modern medicine, the technology around modern medicine and some of the prescription interventions is quite advanced. But the people themselves, at least 170 million of them, aren't feeling well. They're dealing with it. These are chronic diseases. You can live with a lot of them. Some of them are lethal. Some of them you do die. But others are, you know, it's, you've got to take insulin for diabetes, obesity is dealt with many different ways. These are big, big problems. And so what I wanted to understand is, so peroxynitrite, what is it that triggers peroxynitrite? We know internal to the body, it's the little PP factor, so to speak, is the negative molecule internally that's creating all this chaos. And that's really what it is. All these diseases are just chaos, multiple symptoms, but multiple biochemical reactions that aren't working well. So we're kind of a clogged up engine, right? We're not really running well. It's like somebody put sand in our gas tank. We're not running well. We're running, but not well.
So how do we avoid this P factor?
So this is the question. How does it get made? So far, there's three theories out there. So first of all, we don't have germs here. Peroxynitrite's not involved with germs, not directly anyway. You look at what's happening with chronic disease that's germless, it's either diet, behavior, or environment. So we look into this, those areas and see, like, you know, what can be causing it. The three main areas, though, that can be causing is, one, there's a pretty significant chemical that's put into the wheat supply in the U.S. It's called glyphosate. It's part of Roundup, which is used for 90% of the wheat, 95% of the wheat, in the process of production of wheat. Not to kill insects or to, as an herbicide, or, you know, to protect the wheat, but it's actually to accelerate the harvest at the end of the harvest. And the wheat has been fashioned in such a way so that it doesn't mind having Roundup, which is a product, on the wheat. So we think the glyphosate's a problem. It definitely has a lot to do with the aromatic amino acids like tyrosine and tryptophan. These are the precursors to the serotonin that we need. That could be one of the areas. And that's been going on for probably around 20, 30 years. So it's a possibility. Hal Patcher said he thinks it's the high fructose diets. He's pretty convinced that high fructose is an issue and causes peroxynitrite production. And that's a, you know, that's a sort of a scientific view. But the one that's really impressive is Martin Paul, a PhD scientist here in the US, University of Washington State University, I think. He found out that electrical fields in particular microwaves coming from wireless devices like cell phones and Wi-Fi and others, actually create a field that disrupts ion channels in the body. He calls it voltage-gated ion channels. These little ion channels are responsible for calcium efflux from the cells. And that in itself is a trigger for nitric oxide and peroxide nitrate. And so apparently our exposures to these wonderful devices we're all using, to the all this technology that's surrounding us, we are getting high levels of intracellular calcium, which is causing nitric oxide and peroxide nitrate to be formed in increasing levels, way beyond what should happen. These high levels are then in turn creating internal chaos and chronic disease. And so that's the biggest aha out of this. And it's probably, my guess is, if I'm to look at these three things, my guess is the electrical field situation is probably the most obvious one and probably the most, the one you could probably control. You know, you certainly can stop eating non-organic wheat. That would be a good thing to do probably in the U.S. right now. But anyway, so you have these problems. And a lot of countries around the world, everybody has electrical fields, but a lot of countries don't have the wheat situation. And it looks like if you compare the health against these nations, their health is better, but it's not dramatically better. In the neurological category, the U.S. is by far the worst in the world. So we believe that electrical fields might have something to do with it. I've read another paper, it's not published, about chronic disease and about the, you know, so what's behind it. And I go into a little bit more detail. But the big problem here is your electrical environment matters. And it's not something most of us are aware of because we don't understand the electrical sensitivity of human beings. We're electrical creatures, and most of us aren't really aware of how sensitive we are to electrical fields. When you think about it, you know, we've got brain waves and they operate between, you know, zero and maybe 30 hertz. That's 30 cycles per second. These brain waves are frequencies, right? And they're electrical in nature. Your heart is run by electrical waves. Every cell in your body has an electrical charge. And most of your cells in your body run around 25 millivolts top. And millivolts, it sounds like a small number, but death is defined as the absence of electrical presence. So we are electrical creatures, and it's important to know that because we are now surrounded by devices and beams and signals and satellites and cell towers, Wi-Fi. Most people in the U.S. have between, you know, 10 and 20 wireless signals in their house. Some more now because all your appliances are coming with new devices. They're talking to smart meters, which are these meters, electrical meters, which are using wireless technologies to communicate. We're surrounded by these electrical fields. And when you think back to Martin Paul, what he found was, he wasn't the first to discover this. His was a meta study, but he cited 25 studies, which showed that when your body operates, you know, you've got your internal internet. And part of your internal internet is basically the communications between cells. What the cells are telling your body, like what nutrition, you know, how to get rid of waste products, how to communicate, how to convey pain, you know, through your neurological system, through your nerves. But part of the nervous system are kind of wires, you know, kind of what you say, your nerves. But then there's also these ions, and these ions travel around. It's sort of a biochemical reaction, but ions are actually communicating really important information to your body. And they're usually like metals, like they're like calcium or potassium. These ions are critical to life. Calcium is probably the most powerful one. The calcium ions move between your cells and outside of your cells. And what Martin Paul and others have found is that when electrical fields are introduced to your body, let's say you put a cell phone to your head, or you're sitting next to a Wi-Fi router, these ions are changed. Their flow is changed. The way they usually operate is they flow through channels. Imagine they're floating along a wire. And the wire is gated by an electrical charge. They call voltage-gated channels. When it's negative, the calcium goes through. When it's positive, the calcium stops. So the gate is almost like a switch or almost a faucet. And when the faucet turns back on and off, calcium flows either into the cells or out of the cells. So what's so important about that? Well, when calcium is flowing the wrong way and there's too much of it, you begin to create all this biochemical damage, biochemical lack of homeostasis, this a mess in your body that wasn't existing before because it's not operating correctly. So if you imagine all these electrical fields that we're surrounding ourselves with, all this technology, and you understand that it's triggering these voltage-gated channels, especially the ion channels, especially the calcium ones, then suddenly you realize, oh my gosh, what's happening? And so it's not something that necessarily you see immediate. These are things that start to change your biochemistry very insidiously, very stealthily, without you actually knowing. And suddenly, certain things are happening. Headaches, brain fog, difficulty remembering. This is just a healthy person. Word finding, trying to find that word. What was that word again? We call it aging, but it shouldn't be aging if you're 28 years old, right? It shouldn't be aging that people in their 20s and 30s are having a huge amount of joint pain, really terrible sleep, bad memory, you know, difficulty thinking, cognitive impacts. All these are caused by disruptions of the body that are often caused by peroxynitrite. And peroxynitrite is triggered by these electrical fields. So when you ask about the electrical environment, it matters. What is the electrical environment and what has it been? Historically, our electrical environment has been very low. We have lightning, there's sun rays, which has an electromagnetic field, basically, the sun. Functions in your body, like I said, the heart and your brain operating with electrical fields. But that's about it. And suddenly back in the 1800s, when we started introducing the telegraph, actually was one of the first electrical fields that was introduced. It began an onslaught of technologies that moved to radio, that moved to radar, that moved to television. First of all, television that was not cable television, but television that was broadcast TV. And then it kept on moving, cordless phones, cell phones, on and on and on. You're adding all these fields to the environment. How are they affecting us? And what we find is that the presence of these electrical fields in studies are disrupting our health. There are now 6,000 studies that show the impact of electrical fields on our health. And most people aren't aware of this. And there's a whole reason why this has not been a popular topic. However, if you look at the amount of electrical exposures, and most people can do this in their own life, if you were just to turn off all your electrical appliances at night and move all the cords away from your bed, turn off your cell phone, your cordless phone, your Wi-Fi, unplug your microwave. I know it's a lot of stuff, but try to reduce the electrical field in your room. Sleep that way for 2 weeks. And see how you feel. Because, like I say, about 40% of the population have sleep issues. Why? It's not surprising when you think that these electrical fields, which are propagating radio waves or microwaves or some sort of electrical signal, can disturb your phases of sleep. Because each phase of sleep, you operate in a different bandwidth of waves. So, for instance, right now, we're sort of in the beta range. We're probably operating between 11 and 16 hertz. And so that particular range is the wakefulness. It's the alertness. When we go to sleep, we drop down below 8 hertz. And then we go through stages of sleep, which goes all the way down to 1 or 2. And so what is important is that we don't always know exactly how these electrical fields are affecting our body, but we can see through studies and through experience. When you are exposed to these electrical fields, your body chemistry changes, symptoms begin to take place, illnesses start to set in, and we've really seen this dramatic rise in chronic disease at exactly the same time that these electrical fields grew exponentially. And let me just say, if you just take one device, cell phones, which were just 16 million installed around 1990, and now are over 300 million this is the U.S. numbers, over 300 million in the U.S. That's a growth of 6,000%, 6,000% in the number of cell phones. But cell phones are just the tip of the iceberg with all these other new devices, right? Everything from computers to laptops to iPads, iPods, and every single GPS, every car is equipped with GPS, on and on and on. Let me give you some of the growth rates that, you know, when you look at the electrical environment and then you think about what's happened since 1990, Alzheimer's grown by 300%. Autism has grown by 2,000%. Bipolar disorder in children who are very susceptible to these fields has grown 10,000%. Depression, 280%. Lupus, 787%. Sleep apnea, 430%. On and on and on. This is dramatic growth. Why? And so when you look at Martin Paul's science and when you look at the science on electromagnetic fields, you see that the plausible answer is our electrical environment, and it matters. So what can we do about it? There's lots of things you can do about it. You can protect yourself. You can reduce your exposures by reducing your usage. Now, I hear people all the time talking on cell phones, just, you know, for 30 minutes, 45 minutes at the airport, on and on and on about the party, right? About something that was, you know, probably important to them, but it's not critical. If that person really understood the impact it could be having on their biochemistry, that conversation instead of 35 minutes would be a minute and a half. They would talk to them directly next time they see them. So you can reduce your usage. But my favorite way is, I'm not telling people what to do, but my favorite way is turn off everything at night. It's a third of your life. Most of us sleep 8 hours or more. When you sleep 8 hours, that's a third of your life. You can give yourself a chance to recover during that time by really removing these fields. You can put your phone on airplane. You can turn your computers off, or at least turn your Wi-Fi device on there off. There are so many things you can do. Your cordless phone, move it away from the bed. Get a landline if you can. I think your electrical environment is the first step.
So, Rich, you've mentioned that we can avoid this by turning things off at night. But what I'd love to know is there any way of measuring just to see, to know for sure, apart from feeling great after 2 weeks? Is there any way of measuring the field so that we can actually see that there is actually a decline in this dirty electricity?
Right. There's many kinds of electromagnetic fields. There's magnetic fields. There are what we call the wireless fields, which are either microwaves or radio frequencies. And then there's dirty electricity. And dirty electricity is something that we address at Green Wave. Dirty electricity is something that can be controlled. And what it is basically is you have a home that has electrical circuits and electrical wires all through the walls. And these circuits carry a 60 hertz wave in the US or 50 hertz in Australia or elsewhere in the world. And that particular wave is important to power everything, right? It's our electrical power. It's the only wave that really is needed to power these devices. But when you plug in devices or you have things like compact fluorescent lights or wall switches, you know, anytime you see a little box on the end of a computer, that's an AC adapter. All these technologies that we plug in create chaos in the electrical environment of our home. It basically creates new waves, and they're not smooth waves. They're choppy, kind of spiky waves that ride along the electrical circuits and then get spewed into the environment. And actually, as humans, we're exposed to this electrical behavior. And it comes across not as a smooth sine wave, like the nice round corners sine wave, but spiky and sharp, you know, jolts of electrical charge. They call them transients, voltage transients sometimes. But all this electrical energy that's coming in into the house that's really being caused by what we plugged in can be controlled. And there are filters. You can put filters into your circuit. You can buy these plug-ins filters. Green Wave carries them. And you can plug it into the wall and you can not only reduce it, but you can eliminate it to a great extent. And so how do you measure that? We have a device, a meter. It's often called EMI. So we call it power line EMI, dirty electricity. It's really the same thing. EMI is electromagnetic interference. Imagine when you have a radio station, AM or FM radio station, and you're kind of, you hear that static when you're, you know, like you're between stations, that kind of noise. And that particular noise, in fact, I've got a meter here, and I can plug it in and try to give you a sense of what it might sound like. This will be dirty electricity. Can you hear that?
Yes, yeah.
All right. I've got a filter in my hand, and I'm going to plug it in. So that basically eliminates that electrical noise. And we're able to show the removal of that energy, which is not used for your electricity. In fact, it actually makes your electrical environment less efficient for devices. And we remove it. And what we found is that others who have studied this is that by plugging these filters in, people often feel better. And so we typically notice that the immediate reaction of most people is, hey, the environment's calmer. Some people, they have joint pain, will go away. Sometimes people sleep better. We can measure blood sugar in diabetics that have put these filters in. They've seen anywhere from 20% to 80% of the blood sugar decrease. They'll be going from like a 180 or 200 down to 120 or 90. And so we can see that's a measurable result. You know, you can actually see the blood sugar change. People who have asthma, kids who have asthma, we've seen them drop from using the inhaler from like 8 or 9 times a day to 2 times a day or none. This is what we've seen from our customers at GreenWave. When we originally got into it, we saw some studies out on dirty electricity. Dr. Magda Havas did a couple studies in schools, and they measured ADD behavior. The teachers took notes every day and wrote down how the behavior of the classroom, the noisiness, the quality of learning, starting on time, those kinds of things, disruptions. And they found that in 13 ADD behaviors, 11 improved by as much as 30% by putting filters in schools. She did this at Minnesota and Wisconsin, I think also in Toronto. Others looked at this and saw cancer cluster that they correlated with dirty electricity. I'm not claiming that dirty electricity causes cancer. Dr. Sam Milham did a great study on La Quinta School in Southern California. They had a cancer cluster of teachers, 18 teachers out of 90 were really aggressive cancers within like an 8-year period. He's an epidemiologist. He went in. He looked at all the possible toxins that could be causing this. He looked at everything from magnetic fields and electrical fields to dirty electricity to chemicals and others looked at mold, all kinds of different, toxins that could have been affecting the environment. And the only one that had a statistical correlation was dirty electricity. So this is an area that you, without really changing anything except for plugging in filters, you can reduce that electrical energy in your environment, and it changes dramatically. That's what we do at GreenWave, and we continue to look for new ways to improve the electrical environment.
But Rich, if we're living in an apartment style living and we do, as you say, and put these filters throughout our unit, would we potentially be getting dirty electricity from the units above and below?
You know, without filtration at all, your dirty electricity can travel across wires. It tends to be a local problem. Even in your own home, you may have a device and, depending how big your home is, you may have a device in one corner of the house and it's probably affecting a room across the house. But if you filter that room, you're likely to have almost no impact in another room, any other room in the house. You want to filter at the source. When your neighbors have dirty electricity, yes, you could touch in with your circuit. It's probably not as big a problem. It's a local problem, so you can pretty much solve the dirty electricity problem, even if it's coming from the outside. There's some technology that's outside of the house that kind of comes along the wires into the house. But even that technology can be filtered. We find a very, very positive. I mean, we're getting 90, 95% of the dirty electricity out of homes, no matter what the situation. So dirty electricity or electrical magnetic interference, EMI, can be controlled with filtration where there are wires. The hard part is if your neighbors have Wi-Fi, if your neighbors have cell phones, if your neighbors have any game stations, whatever else they've got going in their home, that's a little bit more difficult to control. It's in their home, but it also makes its way into your home.
Yeah, I assume the magnetic fields travel a bit further.
Well, yeah, the electrical fields, especially the high-frequency fields, travel quite a distance. Magnetic fields are another problem. Some people believe magnetic fields are an issue. Others think that it's not the magnetic field, it's the actual electrical field that's associated with it. So that's a question, but most magnetic fields don't extend more than, 8 to 12 feet into the environment. and usually you could control them pretty well. But the airborne microwaves and radio frequencies from the devices, you know, these are the signals. Like, for instance, a cell phone, I'm told that a cell phone can transmit 25 miles. So imagine that's right out of the stratosphere. That's quite a distance, right?
So in that case, no matter what you do in your own home, surely you can't prevent.
It's very difficult. The good news is that when you transmit these fields, they usually decrease at the square of the distance. And so you could, you know, by being farther away, the impact to your body is going to certainly decrease based on distance.
Okay. All right. So I'm really concerned about, so what can we do? So back to the EMI side of things, it sounds like we can definitely do something there with filters. How much money or how many filters are we looking at per room, or is it too hard to give us an average?
Typically, you'd have two per room, except where there's more technology, you might have three, sometimes one in the bathroom. I mean, the best thing is to buy or rent a meter and to check your house and use the meter to guide your installation. But if you don't have a meter, you know, the typical rule of thumb is to put a couple in per room. You know, larger rooms, you might put a few more. Small rooms, you know, like a small office, sometimes just one will do it. Any level is going to improve things, but it's nice to have a meter to actually monitor that.
Okay. And so what sort of cost are we looking at for a, either maybe for even getting a meter in to check it and then also buying their filters?
The filters themselves run between, I think, $26 and $30 each, but it's superb insurance. Most houses' installations can run between $200 and $400 for the filters. So that's just a rough estimate. The meter, if you were to buy it, I think is $140. We are beginning to rent them, and I think the rental fee is going to be $39.95 for like 2 weeks. So you can have it. You could take it to your office. You could monitor your home, lend it to friends. You can measure 10 different buildings if you want in 2 weeks, if you want it, but you can at least get a sense.
Okay. That sounds great. And so just coming back to the more practical side of things with eliminating other forms of poison, I'd like to say, are we able to eliminate the risk by using, say, Bluetooth headphones or earplugs, an ear set when you're on the phone, or is that a myth?
This is where it's very tricky. We don't know. What we don't know is exactly how these fields transmit through the skin and the body into the cells and how the electrical field is actually propagated within the body. How is it propagated? We can look at things like the calcium ion channels changing in the presence of these fields, but I don't think anyone's gone and said, okay, let's try to have somebody with headphones or, you know, use a speakerphone with or Bluetooth instead of putting this cell phone to your head. Common sense would say that by putting a cell phone to your head is going to intensify the field, at least in the ear, your brain area. Having it away from your body will lower the total field. But do we know that, like, by having Bluetooth, which is right in your ear, do we know that that doesn't, you know, transmit in some other way? We just don't know. I mean, I don't know if anyone really has done those kinds of studies. I mean, I would recommend if people are using cell phones to use them less, to keep them on airplane as much as you can. When you do use them, I would tend to say use them in a speakerphone mode, I think would probably be your best bet. But it's not clear. One of the things that has been found in the science on electromagnetic fields is very counterintuitive. The same signal, the same frequency at lower levels is sometimes more bioactive than the higher level. They call it something like attenuation windows, but they're windows of power. So it could be the more powerful field is less bioactive than the less powerful field, even at the same frequency. They've also seen frequencies where certain frequencies cause more problems. It's almost mathematical on how they've done that. But, you know, certain frequencies affect different parts of your body. But with lower electrical fields, I think they did a study on calcium, how calcium efflux can happen, calcium leaving the cell at something like 45 hertz. It was pretty bad. At 60 hertz, it wasn't too bad. At 75 hertz, it was really bad again. And then I think they went to 90, and 90 wasn't so bad. And then again, something like 115, it clicked in again. So your body is signaling. There's a lot of signals going on in your body. And so the frequency may affect how things are being signaled, how things are being processed, how chemical, biochemical reactions are happening. And the same thing with the intensity of the signal. These intensity windows show up. So it's a long answer, but I would tend to not put things in your body. I know that that's, you know, counter to a lot of the people that are doing wearables today, but Bluetooth in your ear, I would caution against. If you have a headset, I'd probably try to get a corded one. I think it would be a little bit better, but it's none of this is a guarantee. We're in uncharted waters.
I think that's the scary thing, Rich. And I think what tends to sort of happen is that people don't want to know about it, right? Because if we know about it, we've really got to change our lifestyle.
It will. Here's the thing that I believe, where people are suddenly having symptoms. And remember, in the U.S., I'm not sure where we are in the rest of the world, but in the U.S., most people in the U.S. are facing some of these symptoms or these diseases. I mean, more than half. So if you're one of those people that is facing MS or you have diabetes or child has autism or you have sleep disturbances, 130 million Americans have sleep disturbances. Something like 100 million Americans are obese. But if you just look at those things, like sleep disturbance, everyone just deals with it, right? They either take medicine or they do what they can. But the people with sleep and obesity, because there's so many, if they're skeptics, why not try the four or five things you can do? Mm-hmm. Put filters in your house. I mean, it's not very expensive for the cost of those diseases and losing bad sleep. I mean, if I said it's going to cost $300 to get better sleep for the next year, that'd be pretty good. Obesity, if you could lose 10, 15 pounds. And we've had a number of people lose weight when they did put lip filters in, and a couple gained weight, but the two that gained weight were underweight. So they got more to their normal weight. So we don't know if it's a normalizing factor. Now, don't buy these filters to try to lose weight, but here's the bottom line for people, you know, with weight problem, and everybody's thinking about weight and calories. I mean, very few people aren't in the U.S. What's happening is the peroxynitrite is disrupting the mitochondria. That's your energy center we talked about. And the energy center, we're not getting enough energy in our body. So we crave. We begin to crave sugar, which is a quick fix, right? Or we crave carbohydrates, which is also a quick fix. And so we're eating more sugar and carbohydrates than we should because we're feeling low at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, right? And that in itself can be improved by reducing the electrical impacts. So the filters are a good start, but I would say use technology less, get a landline when you can, use Ethernet solutions instead of Wi-Fi. I mean, a lot of people don't want to do that, but 90% of the people who use Wi-Fi are using it at the same desk or the same chair or the same location in their house almost every day. I mean, there are people that carry a laptop around or an iPad or an iPhone and they're mobile. And I get that. And when you're out in the field, if you want to be connected, you probably need to use a Wi-Fi solution. But in your house, you really don't need Wi-Fi in your house. I don't most of the time, and sometimes it's convenient, but if you can get an Ethernet, you can get a router that with wires, and you can put the wires along the floor or put them in the walls if you want to do a better job. You can run all your computers in your house the way we used to on wires. It's much more secure, it's much faster response, it's safer, and you can just turn all the extra signals off in your house. Get a landline. Talk on a speakerphone. You don't want the phone necessarily up to your head all the time. No matter what phone, whether it's a landline, whether it's a cordless phone, or whether it's a mobile phone, all of them carry electrical charges, and they're affecting your brain chemistry, your body chemistry. So Why would you do this? If you're total health and everything's great and you're feeling super great, well, I will tell you this. The people that are most affected are children and elderly, over 50 and under 18 are the most affected, and women. Those are big groups. It's kind of unfair because men, typically 18 to 50, typically don't have as much of these kinds of illnesses. When they hit 50, they start falling apart. But women, a lot of the diseases, a lot of the autoimmune diseases, neurological conditions affect women faster than men. And it's probably because of estrogen cycle and things like that that are very specific to women. But children are affected because their body is not absorbs these fields great in a greater way. And the elderly, their immune systems are already probably compromised by years of abuse, you know, just, you know, wear and tear. So people in their 50s. So if you're in your 50s, if you're under 18 or you have children under 18, if you're a woman, if you have an obesity or a weight problem, if you have a sleep problem, you know, why wouldn't you just try to reduce these fields in your own way, turn stuff off at night at minimum, buy filters, do that, and see what happens. The proof is in the pudding. This is not about cancers. There are cancers involved with electrical fields, no question about it. Cancer is hard to connect to electrical fields, right? But sleep is very easy to connect, because if you suddenly reduce all the fields, you know, that you're in and your sleep is better, that might be a good signal that, you know, these electrical fields aren't helping you sleep well, right?
Absolutely. And I love those practical, they're very practical and they're very doable. And especially think with that growing number that you mentioned, just of mobile phones alone, it's just going to get worse, isn't it? So we have to do something.
Yeah.
What astounds me, though, is just the many people out there who just really, I guess, just don't want to know.
Yeah, and I can imagine that. I can see how that, you know, especially if you're in pretty good health, you know, why introduce one more stressful thing into your life, you know?
Exactly.
We're booked now. We hardly have time to do anything. You know, that's a whole other set of questions around, you know, the connectedness that we now have, because now we have very little privacy. Now we have less downtime than before. But that's a separate item. But I understand why people don't want to know. The thing that I would say is, if you can change your life by minimizing these fields or at least reducing them, and you don't have to be drastic, and you can improve your life, and that happens enough times, there are solutions to this. And the solutions are sitting there in Silicon Valley. When you think about Silicon Valley, and I've been working around Silicon Valley for most of my career, if you were to tell the people in Silicon Valley that these technologies are affecting your health, these wireless technologies, and they were to be convinced that it's at least possible, and the more they're convinced, the more they're going to respond, Silicon Valley in 18 months will figure 20 different opportunities to make this work. There are so many things you could do from a technology standpoint to get the connectivity that you want without having the same wireless signal out there that you've got. And so
you're absolutely right, Richard. An example of that is the Orca ring, the sleep wearable. I know there's been a lot of clients saying, you know, make it so that we don't have to be connected to Wi-Fi. And so now there is an airplane mode option. So that sort of behavior, that sort of request has led to that change.
Yep. And so we have the entrepreneurs in Silicon Valley and around the world that can make a difference, that can make the changes. We've taken an easy route. It's easier to be wireless than to be wired. And it's more convenient. The question is, are we willing to trade convenience for health? At what point are we willing to step back and go, you know, health, I mean, what is the point of life? I mean, if you're not healthy, how can you be happy? And so you have to think about, like, what is the point? Is the point productivity, connectivity, availability, convenience, or is it feeling good and feeling happy and having your health?
Absolutely. And look, Rich, I'm conscious of your time. Is there anything you'd like to leave our listeners?
Yeah, I think that we should really, if you're skeptical out there about this item, I get it. I understand why one would be. It's invisible. It's not apparent. It's not like getting stung by a bee. You go, there's the bee, there's the stinger, ouch. It's not immediate. The cause and effect is very murky, but the evidence is overwhelming. And this is what you should think about. But think about the children. Think about your children. Think about your brothers and sisters. Think about the kids out there that are in schools, the kids out there that are growing up. They're the ones we need to protect. They are not able to say to us, you know, what they want. We have to protect them. So protect our children. Let's get the Wi-Fi out of schools and get back to a wired solution. You know, the iPad in every hand in a school, it's not making kids learn any better. In fact, there are many studies that show it's actually decreasing their learning ability because it's not tactile. But let's go back to our schools and let's not throw all this technology at our children before they understand. If we want to use the technology, we feel like we need it at work, great. But let's be careful with our children about this big experiment, because it really is an experiment.
That's great advice. Thank you, Rich. And just before I let you go, just a bit of a question that I ask all my guests is, do you have a tattoo?
I don't.
Any reason why?
I haven't found a reason to have a tattoo, but I'm open-minded.
Okay, excellent. Well, we'll come up with an idea for you. Look, thank you very much for coming on the show, and it's been really insightful for us. We're going to link to GreenWave, your company, as well as your papers, so people can get in touch and find out more about your filters as well.
Excellent.
Excellent. Great. Thank you so much.
Great talking to you. Best to you, and thanks again.
For all the resources and show notes from today's episode, please go to www.ally.fitness. If you like today's episode, please show your appreciation by going to iTunes, give us a 5-star review, and subscribe.